Thank you, Bob. You're good, I trust.
I'm good, and yes, you trust. Yes and yes.
Cubs won again. You know, my wife and I were talking about the Cubs yesterday, and I said, do you remember maybe, I don't know, 20, 25 games into the season when the Cubs lost two in a row, and we worried, we wondered, we thought, oh my gosh, maybe it's not real. Maybe this isn't happening. The Cubs aren't going to be as good as we thought they were going to be. They lost two in a row. And then they lost a series, too, right? They lost the series to the Nationals, didn't they?
Yes.
And so then you said, oh, gee, that was weird, but the Nationals are a good team. I guess my point is it feels so much easier to weather the occasional loss now. I don't have that sort of little knot in my gut that says it's not going to happen.
You got money in the win bank already.
Yeah, I know it. I know it. I mean, and I'm not saying they're going to win the pennant or win the World Series, although if I had to bet, I mean, who would you bet? Who, you know, you'd bet on them, right? But I guess the point is you can relax, you can enjoy the season. They just keep winning their games. They keep winning all the games. But if they do lose a game or two, or if they lose a series, it's okay because you go, yeah, we're really that good. You know, at first you weren't sure. You said, well, we're playing that well, but are we that good? That's maybe the difference between us and the White Sox after the first month.
I was going to say, the White Sox, on the other hand.
I know that. And you didn't know if that was going to be us. And now you go, nah, that's not the Cubs this year. The Cubs are that good. They're playing that well because they're that good, and we'll be fine. So if we lose a series or if we lose a couple games, we're going to be okay here. So I was telling Amy that my parents have Alexa in their house. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, it's a tube. It looks like a tube,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is. It's so Jetson-ish. You know, you talk to it and then it talks back to you and you tell it to do things and it does things. And a friend of mine told me that there's a company called Logitech and they have something that in essence does that in your car, which is really kind of where you need it. And on a phone line to tell us a little bit about it, Griff, you're going to put the call on the Air Force, right? Or you will, Krista, is Patrick Frank, and he is the marketing director there. Patrick, it's John Williams. You're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
I'm good, John. How are you today?
Good. I've been describing it as Alexa for the car, but I don't know that that's fair, and I don't know if that's how you describe it. Tell us what this is that you guys have.
I think that's a great first way to describe it. I think ultimately we know that texting while driving is an epidemic, and that's where we want to help, right? We know that it takes five long seconds to text while you're driving, even for a short message. And then NHTSA says you should not look away from the roads longer than 2 seconds. So that was our starting point. How can we help drivers, commuters, being safer in the car?
Okay.
That was the whole starting point.
So on that then... But there are services. In fact, I have voice to text in my cell phone right now, on my smartphone. If I text, it will print that. I think I still have to manually send it. But will it do it the other way as well? If somebody is texting me, will it read the text back to me then, Patrick?
Absolutely, yes. So I think that's the whole difference with Zero Touch. We optimize for the car. And we've done a lot of testing and studies with industry experts. And they confirm that our average distraction time is 0.3 seconds. So that's obviously way below the 2 seconds recommended by NHTSA, and that was a big goal.
Okay, so I can text to you, you can text to me. And then back and forth, how does that work then?
It's actually very important because the first time you use Zero Touch, you say, text John, and then she will say, what's your message? And I will say, I'm on my way. Then once you respond, it will read out your text to me as well. So I don't have to look at my phone. I don't have to ask for notifications. It will read it out, and then I hear your message. And then we go into a ping-pong mode, which is pretty convenient. It's back and forth, like I was sitting next to you in your car.
Hmm. And what do you call this app and service?
It's Zero Touch, Logitech Zero Touch, and it was we named it like that because you don't have to touch your phone anymore in the car.
Yeah, Logitech, as in logic, L-O-G-I-T-E-C-H, Logitech Zero Touch. And that's actually the name of an app. This is a free app, isn't it?
It's correct. There's a free app on the Google Play Store, and then you get a mount on Amazon.com or Logitech.com, and the mount will automatically start the app once you dock your phone on the mount.
And the mount goes in the vent on your car or on the dashboard?
Correct. There's two versions. There's a vent mount, which will work for most cars, and there's also a dashboard version if you prefer to have it on your dashboard.
Will it play a song? Can I say, as I can to Alexa, play a song, play something from Hamilton? Will that happen?
Yes, absolutely. So we spoke to a lot of beta testers here in the U.S. and tested, and they helped us really making the experience better. And what they told us is that three use cases in the car is texting, music, and navigation. So you can totally say, play that song on Spotify, Pandora, or my radio station, and it will automatically play that song. You don't have to touch your phone. Don't have to unlock your phone. It's all voice controlled.
I would say that the thing I do the most in my car with my smartphone, which I wish I wasn't doing. Texting is a problem for all of us, but it's the navigation. And sometimes, for some reason, my phone doesn't work right all the time. Like, sometimes it'll stop talking to me, whatever. Anyway, I've become too dependent on that to tell me how to get places, but at least it does that. So how is your app different from the maps and the audio map that I already have on my smartphone?
It's actually helping you to use Google Maps or even here by using your voice. So you can actually say, take me to the airport, take me to school, take me to a lunch place, and it will help you getting there without touching your phone, without unlocking your phone, all via voice.
And I don't have to type in the location, because this is what happens to me too. Say it takes me to the airport, but then from the airport I got to go to the hotel. And sometimes you find yourself changing your mind or going to a different location while you're on the road, and you can't pull over if you're on a highway, say. So now you're driving and typing in that little field a location on your map function on your smartphone, which is dangerous, and we shouldn't be doing that, but there we are. In your case, I can just say, take me to the Intercontinental Hotel, right?
Correct, absolutely right. You can even ask, if you look for a food place, for example, what are the ratings, and we'll pull the Yelp ratings and even opening hours. And then to make this really nice, you can also call them and book a table for the two of us for a nice dinner, for example, right?
Okay, that does sound like Alexa too, where I would say, so I'm driving down the road, and now I want to go, I don't know, to a Starbucks. I can say, where's the nearest Starbucks, right?
Yes.
And then it will give me voice command directions to get there?
So what we will do, we'll open your Google Maps or here, Waze, whatever you used last. So we'll actually using the navigation device on your phone. We don't do navigation ourselves. We help you using your current apps with voice control. That's what we're doing.
But you told me the other day that it also, like, if I said, take me to the best sushi place or a good sushi place nearby, but I wanted it to be qualitative too, it does that as well, right?
Yes, correct. So actually, we're using Yelp to help us here, and Yelp has all the ratings from their users. So we can say, find me the best sushi place. I know that not everybody likes sushi, so we can also go to an Italian place, say, find me the best Italian place or burger place. You can also say that.
Well, that's pretty smart, because if you're at the airport or the hotel or wherever, sometimes you're just in another town, you don't know where the good place is, but Yelp is at least a clue. So it will tell me, based on Yelp reviews, how to get to the best sushi place, burger place, whatever.
Exactly. And then you can even ask for the opening hours, so you don't have to drive there and realize just when you're there it's closed. You ask, when are they open? They open till 10 p.m. If you are on a longer route, it will tell you they might be closed by the time you're arriving. So it really helps you to be far more focused on the roads and less distracted, right?
Really? I mean, so you keep coming back to that. Is that what convenience is great, but you're kind of about safety. Is that what the driving force on this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really about distraction time. I think we want to replace the looking down and touching your phone with the looking up and talking to your phone. That's like our best description. At the same time, you know, people tend to use products or gadgets which are also convenient. We're trying to combine both in one.
Yeah. Patrick Frank's on the phone. He's the marketing director at Logitech, L-O-G-I-T-E-C-H. And the app that you are describing, what's the name of that again?
It's Zero Touch.
Zero Touch, zero as in touch. Zero touch your phone. And then there was one other thing I just wanted to ask you about, and I'm not sure if I am clear on this feature, but if I'm going somewhere, will it share with people in my network where I am so they can see how late I am, or am I on time, or wherever I am? But I mean, will they see my map or my location?
Absolutely. So we partner with Glimpse. Glimpse is a service which has been there for a while, and they're experts in location sharing. So there's two ways. You can either send your location to someone, and it will actually, the recipient gets a real-time link on the web, so you don't have to update your location yourself every 5-10 minutes. Or even better, if you get a text coming in asking, where are you, it will automatically suggest to share the location.
I just say share location, and then they'll see the map of where I am.
Exactly. And then they can follow you. You're traveling at 65 miles per hour on the highway, and they can then, in real time.
What if I don't want them to know where I am, Patrick?
You just say no. It works as well. You're in full control zone.
Yeah. You may have a question. If you have a question for our guest, I have to pause here, Patrick. Do you have just a couple more minutes?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm here.
Patrick Frank, Marketing Director, Logitech. The number to call is 312. And then what do I say? 981-7200. See, this is why I need your app, Patrick, because sometimes my brain goes away. 312-981-7200. This is WGN. By the way, Patrick, I'm going to take Paul on line two. Krista, Paul, you're on WGN. What was your question? Hi.
Yeah, hi. How you doing today?
Good.
Good. I had a question. I just tried looking on my iPhone to see to find the app. Is it an Apple app?
Patrick, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. So great question, actually, and nice meeting you. I think we consulted with industry experts, and we learned very quickly that in the car, we have to do one thing right and then do the next one. So we started with Android only. Next one will be other operating systems. So
when is it going to be available for Apple phones?
I think there's no date yet. We're still working on that, but we'll keep you posted for sure.
Okay.
Sorry about that, Paul. Yeah, that's a $64 question. I think actually more people have Android phones, but I think more Apple phones use apps. But
right.
So you started with, it's good for Droid users right now anyway, huh, Patrick?
Yes, absolutely. And to your point, it's a bigger share right now, so we start there. But for sure, we want to help everybody out there to be safer, so we'll tackle this next.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Well, so if you're a Droid guy, thanks, Paul. Appreciate the call. And I know a couple of you had that question as well, so there's your answer for now. It's called Zero Touch, and you can, if you're a Droid guy, go online and get it. It's free. If you want to buy the mount, and that's kind of the convenient gadget that goes with this. Do you go to Logitech.com for that?
Yes, or Amazon.com. Those
Amazon.
Are possible.
Cool. Correct. All right, Patrick, nice to meet you. Good luck on that. And it sounds to me like that's a pretty good idea. We could all probably do better to keep our eyes on the road. And for that matter, just get some of that information. I mean, even if I was looking at my phone, it wouldn't be easy to access all of this on the roll. And that's what you guys are doing. So good job so far anyway. Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you very much, John. Have a great day.
Yeah, Patrick Frank works with a company called Logitech, L-O-G-I-T-E-C-H. Our Mincing Rascals podcast dropped yesterday, where the gang talks about a bunch of things. Certainly what happened in Orlando this week, and then the presidential politics. Plus, Eric Zorn and Krista McQuarrie got into a disagreement about who is serving or disserving Illinois more, the Democrats or the Republicans. And then I asked the guys, I said, hey, just humor me for a second. Would Michael Jordan have completely lost it in a playoff game the way Steph Curry did the other night? I'm watching this game, and I have been a fan of the Golden State Warriors all season long, but as the season went on, I found myself liking them less and less. I don't know why, but now I find myself utterly rooting for LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers, almost like they're underdogs. Imagine that, LeBron James being the little guy, but you want him to lead the charge. They're down 3-1, then 3-2, and then 3-3. And you think, well, Golden State will get it together. But not only did they not get it together in Game 6, they completely lost their composure. He fouls out. He gets tossed out. He throws his mouthpiece into the stands, which, by the way, is available on eBay now for like $1,000. And so I asked them, I said, well, you may have this conversation about who's the greater or better basketball player or basketball team, but But I don't ever remember Jordan losing his composure that way. Bob, you don't follow basketball the way
not
I
really,
do.
But I followed Jordan back in the
day.
Did
he ever have
no?
What was the famous meltdown where he completely lost it? I don't remember.
Yeah, because there wasn't one.
Well, that's it.
And I'm an authority on the matter.
Well, I'm not, but I sure don't remember one. And really, if you are the Steph Currys or the LeBron James or the Michael Jordans of the world, you can't. I mean, you can, but if you want your team to win, if you want to have momentum going into the next game, at least keep your wits about you. And they completely fell apart. By the way, Golden State, you may have not gotten some of the calls you wanted, but you didn't lose 20 points worth of calls. All right, we'll let the gang talk about that, and we'll visit with the boys from the beat in the 2 o'clock hour and talk about that then, too. Bob's going to update you on the news next on WGN. Thank you, Bob. You know, I'm a little into Hamilton, the musical. Haven't seen it. Don't think I will see it for a very long time. I think the only reason I'm really into it is because I hear it's something awesome and I can't have it. And so you covet that which you can't get. But, you know, I watch the Tonys and we have the soundtrack at home, and tickets for the Chicago show go on sale. Oops. Tickets for the Chicago sale of it. Tickets for the Chicago show of it go on sale this week. And so I reached out to a guy from Playlist.com or Playbill.com, and he's going to come on a little after 2 o'clock because you know who you're competing with. It's not just other people that want to buy tickets. It's ticket bots that people use.
Yeah.
Little robotic software programs that go in there and just buy up all the tickets. You wonder why I can't get them. It's because literally computer programs have snatched them all up. So what is that? How does it work? And how do we combat that? You'll want to hear that after 2. But it's 1:37 right now, and on Saturdays at this time, we play a segment from our Mincing Rascals podcast. This is John Williams. I appreciate you tuning in, and I hope that you listen to the podcast. You can subscribe to it, and we always post it on Facebook. You can also hear it at WGNplus.com. It's a weekly podcast with some of my colleagues here and in the Chicago Tribune, and we talk about some of the current events of the day, and there were a lot this week. Steve Bertrand gets us started.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on WGN.
And I'm Krista McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
And a columnist as well, twice monthly. Is that right there, Krista?
That's correct.
Your colleague at the Tribune, Eric Zorn, can't be with us today, which will make this a lot easier for the rest of us. Let's talk about the Orlando shooting. I got a whole host of questions in front of me, guys, and if you don't mind, I'll just kind of go through my list of questions, curiosities, and conundrums. Should the media be using the shooter's name? Kristen, the Tribune continues to publish it, but I know one major NBC outlet in Minneapolis is not going to mention his name, they said, and maybe we shouldn't.
I feel like we have this conversation every time something like this happens. Is the other station not naming it because they don't want to elevate him or create like a copycat situation?
Right.
I mean, it's hard for me to not side on the side of news. This was a huge story. He was killed on the scene. There's really no question that he's responsible for it, so I don't have a problem using his name at all.
It's like during a rainstorm closing your upstairs window because the basement is flooded. It's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. I mean, maybe they feel good about that. Maybe they're taking a stand of it, but he needs to be named. We need to know who he is. We need to know about him. I think that's sort of an empty effort.
Well, I think it would be if it were only that, but I think there's more to it than that.
Do you think if the other shooters hadn't been named that this guy wouldn't have shot up that nightclub?
There's a certain momentum that these guys feed off of, and the more we exalt these people, however perversely in their minds, the more likely it is that somebody else will do that again. Malcolm Gladwell was on TV this week, and he said, I guarantee this guy was obsessed with Columbine, that these terrible people gain fame, and they live vicariously through that until they pull the trigger. For instance, I have been able to read some of his tweets and Facebook posts and some of his thoughts and feelings about ISIL or the United States, and I'm thinking, you want to talk irrelevant? I don't think we should even be sharing that. He doesn't have a relevant position in the dialogue about America and ISIS.
So you're not calling this a terrorist attack at all?
No, I think it's a hate crime.
I think it's all mixed together. I mean, I think the anti-American rhetoric and the ISIS movement probably helped allow him to do this?
When he was committing the crime and he was on the phone identifying himself as an ISIS sympathizer, how can you not, you know, categorize this as, of course it was a terrorist attack. And yes, it was a hate crime. And that's why it has not extra meaningful, but to the gay and lesbian community who already feel targeted, this was, and then to have some politicians not come out as strongly as they maybe would have if it was a different club, has been just made the story especially grinding and raw and terrible. And the news media cannot not cover it or tone down the coverage or try to take responsibility so that another copycat doesn't happen.
To me, a terrorist attack means that ISIL directed it or that a foreign government helped him plan it. This is a lone wolf. This is just a hateful, deranged individual.
By that definition, then San Bernardino wouldn't be a terror attack, right?
I don't know that it was. I mean, it reminds me of San Bernardino.
So it was a workplace shooting. I mean, it was his workplace.
Sure. For instance, as a result of this, should we stop the inflow of immigrants from those parts of the world, whatever those are? No, of course not. I don't see the connection.
I think lone wolf terrorism is the world we live in now. If someone is willing to, it's no different than maybe a suicide bomber attacking our troops overseas. If someone is willing to kill others and then kill him or herself, that's terrorism. Why are we so uncomfortable using the word? I don't understand the semantic debate that happens every time this occurs.
Well, boy, because it happened this time, too.
In this case, if it's terrorism, it's ISIS-related, which is part of a bigger fight.
You watched President Obama this week struggle at first to not say radical Islam, and then called out by Donald Trump, he at least explained himself. What did you think of his rationale behind all of that?
Well, if it's true that foreign governments, Islamic governments, have asked him not to use that term, then I certainly understand why he wouldn't. To me, this strikes me as a fight in a marriage where you decided 10 years ago to do something or not do something, and now you just can't change it, you know, because this is, we've always said it this way or we've never said it this way, and I'm not going to let you make me use this term, right? I mean, that's kind of where they are with Obama and Islamic terror.
What do you think, Kristen?
I mean, I've heard some Islamic groups here in Chicago who, you know, they're kind of the go-to people after something like this happens. They call it radical Islam, too. And they are very clear in clarifying that this is not symbolic of the religion overall, that this is not instructed from the Quran. But I don't think they hesitate to admit that these are folks who have been radicalized through Islam.
I also don't understand why we're so outraged that it's not used. I mean, I think both sides have made too much of this.
Semantics.
Well, I think that's the president's doing. He's the one that's elevated this conversation. And if he had been saying radical Islam all along, I think we would have shrugged. But now it's a very divisive two words. You're either with him or against him on that rhetoric.
But who cares?
Right.
How irrelevant whether he says it or not. And so to carry out this campaign where, you know, he obviously doesn't understand the enemy because he won't say fill in your blank is ridiculous, too. None of it matters, and we should just move beyond it.
Well, I'm wondering, too, what we should do about all of this anyway. That is, should we ask the Congress to enact policies that will restrict the purchases of guns, go after the munitions, or should we ask Congress to go after the people? No fly, no buy policies or something like that. Should we make it harder for mentally ill people or people on no fly lists to get guns?
So far, they're all yeses. What are your other questions?
Well, I don't know which is easier, to be honest with you, Steve. I think the no fly, no buy thing is not as easy as it sounds. Hillary Clinton is, you know, indignant. Of course we have to do that. And I'm thinking, okay, exactly how do you do that? Because people are on the no-fly list who shouldn't be. Bugs Bunny's on that list.
But there's a way to get off the no-fly list.
How long are you on that list? When do you get off that list? And it's a Second Amendment right. This is the slippery slope, Steve. If the government says, you know, we just don't like Bertrand, the spelling of his name, or the chat rooms he's been in, he's on the no fly list. Well, some of us would say good, but really? So now he can't go in and buy a gun?
No, I get that, but they are able to say I can't fly in an airplane. Yeah. I mean, they are able to take that.
But that's not a constitutionally protected right. You don't have the right to fly an airplane.
I don't agree with you there. I think if the government can say unequivocally, we think this guy might be dangerous enough to where we won't even let him get on an airplane, that they should be able to say he's dangerous enough that he won't be able to buy a weapon. I mean, I think Hillary Clinton put it succinctly and beautifully when she said, You know, most of us can't carry a bottle of shampoo on an airplane, but someone who's not allowed to fly on an airplane can go buy an AR-15 gun. I mean, I that's crazy.
It makes no sense.
Now, with the bigger terror watch list, where there are 800,000 people on it or something like that,
yeah.
I mean, there's some difficulties there, I think, with putting a gun ban in. That would be much harder. But if you're on the no-fly note, if you're on the no-fly list, you know you are, or it's not a secret that you are. And I just think that's a no-brainer.
There was some research that I was reading that the FBI, lack of coordination is a huge problem between all of these, between Homeland Security, FBI, and local officials. It always has been. Every time something like this happens, we talk about it, and still the walls are there. They work in silos, and that is a huge problem. But the idea that you could, the FBI could do a better job of vetting the no-fly list to make sure that they are targeting the right people and then forward that information to federally licensed gun dealers, I think is probably doable.
Right.
You can't vet 800,000 people.
Of the 800,000, it's a pretty small number who are Americans. I don't know if that matters or not. But the thing about that list is that it's also secret. So, you know, you don't want someone who's under surveillance to go in and buy a gun and have the gun dealer say, oh, it says here I can't sell you a gun. You must be under surveillance, and to tip them off, that's a problem.
Well, the NRA has an obvious position on this, and props to Donald Trump, right? He's going to tell the NRA, no, I think we should actually restrict gun ownership to some of these people.
I think it's funny, interesting that Donald Trump...
Funny, ha-ha, no.
Well, no, it's just,
no.
I'm not
funny,
sure...
Funny, interesting.
Funny, interesting that, that Donald Trump wants to change this policy, and he's not going to the lawmakers who are responsible for changing the policy. He's going to the money. I mean, that's a pretty funny, interesting thing, right? How often do you do that? If he believes that the no-fly, no-buy thing should be, or you know, should be in effect, why doesn't he go to Republican senators and say, "Hey, you guys need to do this"? Instead, it's either cynical or it's completely and absolutely realistic. He's going to the people who are funding those senators, right?
The NRA,
right? Because they're going to do whatever the NRA tells them. Maybe it's just a bluntness that should be appreciated. I just think it's kind of interesting.
I think it is,
he's doing
because
that.
I don't think the NRA is going to do his bidding on this. I mean, nobody agrees with Donald Trump on everything, so there'll be a disconnect there, but at least Trump is making his position clear, and it's quite clear.
You're on that list. I hope he succeeds. Absolutely.
Yeah, so you're going to vote for him now, right?
I really hope he succeeds in this.
And then we laughed. That's part of our Mincing Rascals podcast. You can download it each week free. We post it at WGNplus.com. It's also on my Facebook page. I'm King John on Facebook. Just one quick note about that. So we did talk there about the terror watch list, how it works, how you get on it, and how you don't get on it. And it's fascinating. There's more than a million, actually. These numbers vary. It depends on the source and the list you're talking about. But a million is not a bad number to start with. And then how you can get off the list is almost comical. I'll read that to you in just a minute, and you might answer this question at 312-981-7200. What do you think? If you can't fly, you can't buy. Is that a good idea? I'm John Williams. This is WGN. So at least according to ABC, this is the deal with the terror watch list. What it's commonly referred to as the watch list is actually a collection of lists, beginning with the Terrorist Identities Data Mart Environment. They call that TIDE. This is a little dated. As of July 2013, the TIDE list contained more than 1 million names. About 280,000 of the names have no recognized terrorist group affiliation. The process for placing someone on a list begins with originators, who range from everyday citizens to federal agents. Social media posts can also trigger a process for placing someone on the list. Once an originator passes along a name, boy, doesn't this sound a little Orwellian? You can just turn them in. Once an originator passes along a name to law enforcement, counterterrorism officials rely on an elastic set of guidelines in order to add someone to the list. Agencies must have, quote, reasonable suspicion or articulable evidence that the person is known or suspected terrorist. But they also say we do not have to have irrefutable evidence and concrete facts. Those are, quote, not necessary. Well, they must not be, because really a million names are on the TIDE list. Once your name goes on the list, your information can then be shared with the CIA, the FBI, the U.S. Department of Defense, state and local police, tribal police, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, the Departments of State, the Department of the U.S. Agency for International Development, foreign countries and partners, my mom. From there, your name can be placed into individual watch lists, such as the U.S. Transportation Security Administration's no-fly or selectee lists. And then when you distill that down to the no-fly list, that began with just 16 names after 9/11 and has now grown to 47,000 names. Actually, again, this is a little dated. Kristen said something like 80,000, but somewhere between 40 and 80,000 individuals are prohibited from boarding a plane. The selectee list triggers enhanced screenings at the airport. So if you wonder, why do I always get pulled out? It may be, unbeknownst to you, you're on the selectee list. Neither list prohibits an individual from buying a gun. Individuals who believe they have been wrongfully added to a watch list can file a complaint through a redress program, which launches an internal review, which is not subject to oversight by any court or entity outside the counterterrorism community. So they get to decide, and there's no hearing, you don't have an attorney, and there's no judge, but at least somebody will then look at your case. The review can result in removal of an individual's name, but the individual will not necessarily be notified because the government maintains a general policy to neither confirm nor deny an individual's watch list status. Individuals can even be kept on the list after being acquitted of a terrorism charge if authorities still have reasonable suspicion. So that's either very reassuring or very not reassuring.
A little bit of both.
Yeah, a little bit of both. I mean, I know. You know, look, I just want them to get it right. But you think that if you were on there and you shouldn't be, that you ought to be able to go, hey, you misspelled my name, or my name is, you know, Muhammad something or another, but I'm okay. And then they decide if you get off. And if you do, they don't tell you. You'll just have to go to the airport, I guess, and see. By the way, the Mincing Rascals, Bob, at the end of each episode, always do a little recommendation session. What are you watching, reading, listening to, or now drinking that you want to recommend to our audience? And my recommendation this week was America's Got Talent. You don't watch that show much, do you?
A little bit. I saw the guy who with the tape on his mouth.
Oh, yeah, right.
That one I saw.
Well, that's how I see it. I don't watch the show, but the next day it's always getting posted, and so
that
I
was
look
the
at
one.
These things.
I just saw it a few minutes ago,
okay,
actually.
So, Griff, can we play one of the sound bites from that, the one with Salvatore? So out walks a guy, 20 years old. He's built like a refrigerator. He looks like his name is Sal or Vinny. In fact, his name is Sal Vincinetti.
I saw this one as well.
He's awesome slash good enough. I mean, this whole scene is just great because he just strolls out like, hey, he looks at...
he's like an extra from The Sopranos.
Totally. He looks at Heidi Klum and he goes, Heidi, how you doing? And she says, how you doing? He goes, no, how you doing? I mean, he was actually trying to play her right there in front of everybody, you know? And then he says, you know, I want to do it my way. I want to be something. They say, what do you do now? He says, I deliver pizzas for my cousin. And I move bodies by the airport. What do you need? So this guy sings this way.
Let me tell you. For what is a man? What has he got? If not himself, then he has not. To say the things he truly feels, and not the words. Shows. Sal took all the blows. Yeah. I did it my way.
I absolutely feel that Sal does not have a career in music, but that was a great scene, and he hit it out of the park. I was so happy that he had that moment. We've actually posted that clip on our Vibe Score app, and you'll see what the score is that's getting in the next hour. The news is coming up on WGN.
You'll be back, soon you'll see. You remember you belong to me. You'll be back, time will tell. You remember that I served you well. Oceans rise, empires fall. We have seen each other through it all. And when push comes to shove, I will send a fully armed battalion to remind you of my love. Da, 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 da.
You listening to Hamilton, or are you anxious to see it? Tickets go on sale June 21st. In Chicago, June 21st, Hamilton tickets will go on sale. So now you're saying, okay, push is about to come to shove. I was reading online an article by Robert Viagas, who is the managing editor at Playbill.com, and he said, it sounds like something out of science fiction, ticket bots. But these computer programs that circumvent ticket buying limits and snatch up hundreds of the most sought-after tickets within moments after they go on sale are one of the primary reasons why ordinary ticket buyers seem like they can never get their hands on the tickets that they want without resorting to high-priced resellers. So welcome back, Robert. We appreciate you coming on with us here on WGN. How are you?
My pleasure. Happy Father's Day weekend from Broadway.
Yeah, no kidding. And the conversation we're about to have, I think we could be having about Yankees tickets or Super Bowl tickets or Justin Bieber tickets.
Concert tickets.
Absolutely. And
but right now it's in the news because of our big hit Hamilton. Everybody wants those tickets. And they just put a new block of them on sale the night of that it won all those Tony Awards. They put a new block on sale from next January to next June. A lot of those tickets got bought up immediately by ticket bots.
Huh. I'm reading Chris Jones in the Chicago Tribune, and he said the average price right now is $1,000 for a resold ticket. $1,000
for a resold ticket, right? Well, that's the difference. Right now, the face value of the tickets is not that cheap either. They're $179 in the mezzanine and $199 in the orchestra, and you're lucky if you can get those tickets. But you know, in recent years, they set aside a hunk of the theater, sort of the tenderloin in the center of the orchestra, and they sell them as what are called premium tickets. And those are the ones that when you look at the price, your head wants to explode.
Well, what do these bots do? As in robots, these little, it's a software program, right?
It's a software program. And you would think that these bots are run by big corporations or something like that, but it's not. A lot of times these things are just run by essentially hackers, the same people who would, hack into your computer. They create these programs that will go into when the tickets go on sale, they will instantly hit the sale point with sometimes hundreds or even thousands of requests for tickets. Now, as you know, a lot of times they will limit. They'll say you can only buy two or sometimes four tickets at a time. Well, if you run a program that can hit these things hundreds or thousands of times, you can pick up a lot of tickets very fast.
So it's it's obviously not being done over the phone. This is online purchases. It's acting
online
like
purchase.
A human. But they have that thing now that says, okay, here's a fuzzy address and letters, and you have to retype it. It says, are you a human being? How does it get around that?
Well, a lot of times it has recognition software that's able to recognize it. Don't forget also, sometimes you as a human being aren't able to recognize it.
That's true.
And you can hit a button and say, show me another one. And so if the ticket bot doesn't recognize it, it will say, show me another one. But don't forget, you're doing it slowly as a human being, and you're typing it in really slowly. A ticket bot can do that like that.
Yeah, and then again, and then and again, and again, and again, and again, and just keep doing it and just buying up all the tickets
right.
that are available.
Right, and if they make a mistake, if it doesn't go through properly, if they type it in incorrectly, it instantly, not only will it instantly redo it, it also has hundreds or even thousands of other programs are doing exactly the same thing at the same time. So they can have a failure rate of 40 or 50% or more and still suck up all the tickets.
When I'm buying tickets, though, don't I also have a personal address? And does it then mask that? Because you think maybe the ticket sellers would notice that 100 tickets have already been purchased by that one computer address.
Well, you know, if there was a way to prevent this from happening, they would have figured out how to do it by now. The problem is, as quickly as they can't come up with security systems, somebody with a very tricky evil mind is able to figure out how to get around it.
So
now, the only thing that in New York State, what they're trying to do now is, right now, these ticket bots are illegal already. They're already illegal. The thing is, it's treated as a civil offense, and you have to pay a fine. And a lot of these people consider those fines as a cost of doing business. So what they're trying to do now in New York State, at least, is to criminalize what we're talking about here so that you don't just pay a fine, you go to jail. But, of course, you know, people can move to other states where it is still legal. It's really going to take a coordinated assault on these people who run these illegal programs. Otherwise, it's going to be very difficult for any of the rest of us to get these tickets in a timely fashion and at a reasonable price.
Well, after
then they just turn around and resell them for, you know, 5 or 10 times as much.
Yeah, well, that was my question. I wonder how they bring them to market then. StubHub isn't doing that.
That's right. StubHub, but now, of course, at least in New York, as I said, the attorney general is going after StubHub and people like that and saying, you people have a responsibility to stop this. You have a responsibility to keep this from happening, to identify who these people are so that we can track them down.
Oh, yeah, right, because StubHub is just hosting them. StubHub said, look, we didn't do that.
Right.
People came to us to sell the tickets. And now,
exactly,
is it fair
right.
to ask StubHub to vet all of the people that are using their platform?
Well, I think that especially when the abuse is so blatant and so widespread, I think, yes, I think if you're just a person and you get sick and you can't and you're not able to use your ticket and you want to resell it on StubHub, that's what StubHub should be for. But when these people come in and they're selling hundreds of tickets at grotesquely inflated rates, it really becomes incumbent on StubHub and these. I don't want to just single out StubHub. There's a number of different places that resell tickets. And I think it's incumbent on them to at least help law enforcement to track these people down. Because, as I said, it's already illegal.
But, you know, it's an interesting debate, isn't it? Because if you say grossly inflated prices, but somebody's willing to pay it, nobody's putting a gun to the head of the buyers.
Well,
so
you know that,
that there's a market for that. And
that's an excellent point.
And the argument from the producers of Hamilton is now, okay, we'll just go ahead and raise. Why don't we charge $800 or $600? In fact, I think they are going to do that in Chicago for the best nights on the best seats.
Well, that's the premium pricing that I was talking about on Broadway. Now, the premium price for Hamilton, which was $549, is now $849. And their explanation is, why should the money go to a scalper? Why shouldn't it go to the people who actually created Hamilton? But still, you're eating your seed corn when you do stuff like that. Well, you're turning off people who are going to be your future audience. I will say this: there's a lot of discounting that goes on among theater tickets. I mean, even Playbill.com, we have discounted tickets that we sell through the Playbill Club. But there's a lot of places where you can get discounted tickets. Even right in Times Square, the TKTS booth, you can get tickets for substantially less than what's on the face value. So theater tickets are becoming like airline tickets. You may be sitting next to somebody who paid a lot more than you did or a lot less than you did. And that's just the way they're now delivering the tickets.
Well, what's your advice?
Unfortunately,
what's your advice to the people who Tuesday in Chicago are going to try and get tickets?
Well, start a ticket bot, I guess, is the best piece of advice. No, what they should do is they should try to get the tickets as early as they
can. That is such a bad answer, Robert. That is so wrong of you.
You're exactly right. I was only kidding. That, of course, is illegal. They can't do that. That's not a legal thing to do. But they need to try to get the tickets as quickly as they can, or buy it at the box office if they're able to get to the box office. That's usually a better idea than going over the phone. But online is where most people buy their tickets now. And just get on and maybe get your whole family to go on.
That's what we do. You know, you become kind of an analog bot. It's just you and a bunch of friends all clicking away as much as you can, as often as you can, and somebody scores. I just want to read you one last paragraph. in Chris Jones' piece about this week. He said this. This is the Chicago version. If you buy a ticket to Hamilton from Broadway in Chicago, you are agreeing to the following language on its website. Quote, tickets purchased from Broadway in Chicago cannot be resold, transferred, or distributed to any ticket broker or any other person or entity for resale. Broadway in Chicago reserves the right to deny admission to any person seeking admission with a ticket obtained in violation of the terms of this paragraph. Broadway in Chicago further reserves the right to seek recovery from the ticket purchaser for all damages incurred by Broadway in Chicago. As a result, if any breach of this paragraph, together with attorney's fees and other reasonable expenses incurred by Broadway in Chicago in collecting such damages. And finally, he said, Chris Jones said, wow, the Chicago presenter is not just prohibiting resale at over face value by some profiteer, but any resale. You can't sell it to a member of your family. But that's just how, I guess, here we're trying to nip it in the bud.
I think it's very smart to do that. Of course, it comes down to a question of enforcement.
Yeah.
You know, how do you enforce that? How do you know? How do you track that? Unless there's a computer chip in the ticket, it may come to that at some point. It may come to that. But it sounds like they're taking this very seriously, as they should. It sounds like they're looking after their audience, as they should. But it is going to make it harder on people who legitimately want to sell a ticket that they missed it, they had to work late, something like that, where they had no choice but to get rid of the ticket or to transfer the ticket.
Yeah.
And it's too bad. It punishes people who have a legitimate issue. And you know, once again, crime may pay in the short run, but it harms people in the long run.
Okay, Robert Viagas is the managing editor at Playbill.com. Playbill.com. How many stories do you guys post a week? You told me the number or day over there. You're busy, aren't you, Robert?
We sometimes post as many as 40 stories in a day. There's a lot going on in the theater world. When we started it up, we weren't sure we were going to be able to publish 40 stories in a week. But we started up in 1994, by the way. We've been around a while. But there's a lot going on in the theater world beyond Hamilton. We had a big story this week. One of the leads in Hamilton, one of the Tony-nominated leads, has already left the show and has already gotten a starring role in a new musical, Amelie. Philippa Sue, who was the leading lady in Hamilton, is leaving July 9th. She's already got another gig. So there's been a lot of an awful lot has been going on in our world, and people are now much more interested in the live theater than they were even 10 years ago. Thanks to TV shows like, you know, Glee and others, and movies, and it's much more in the culture than it once was.
Playbill.com.
And that makes a busier world, busier week for us. But
Robert,
we love it.
I so appreciate your time. I pestered you all week for this, and I know I'm sure you want to take Saturday off, but I appreciate you coming on.
I am so pleased to talk to your listeners. I'm so pleased that they're interested. And I hope that we solve this problem, because this is a serious problem, especially for a big hit like Hamilton.
Robert Viagas is the managing editor at Playbill.com. It's 2:21. This is GN. It's 2:26. And, you know, just a more common example of that is you got Cubs tickets or you got Bulls or Blackhawks tickets, right? And you now can't use them. And you say, oh, shoot, what a shame. Broadway in Chicago says, you cannot sell those to your friend. And I think maybe you ought to be able to sell your Blackhawks tickets. You can't go, or you choose not to go. Why can't you sell them and recover your cost? And then, Bob, I'll ask you, should I be able to resell them at a profit? So I got $100 worth of Blackhawks tickets. You want to give me $150? Why don't I take $150 from you?
Seems fair to me.
How about $900?
$900? I know there are people who would do that.
Well, that's it. And so if somebody's coming along and they go, well, I really want to go to the Blackhawks and I don't have Blackhawks tickets, and oh, my cousin's in town, we would give anything to get the tickets. Say, okay, how about $900, anything? And you say, if that makes you happy and whole and I'm okay with that, then, you know, you can see how you can justify that transaction. It feels wrong when we're talking about these Hamilton bots and so forth, but sometimes on an individual level, how many of us haven't been part of a transaction at some level like that? Okay, 2:28. Let's pause. Bob will update you on the news. Still to come, the boys from the Beat Talk Sports, our Vibe Score segment is a little bit of everything on WGN. We'll get to our Vibe Score segment as we do Saturdays at this time in just a second, but I just wanted to share this with you. There is a commercial for Amazon Prime on TV that I love because it uses the song from the closing credits of the movie Schenectady, New York. And the song is lovely, and it goes a little like this.
I'm just a little person.
Have you seen the ad?
One.
I saw the movie.
Yeah, no kidding. These are the closing credits to the film. Isn't this just sweet?
Yes.
Who are not aware of me. I do my little job and live my little life. Eat my little meals. Miss my little kids. And somewhere, maybe someday.
So I search out the song, and I see that the song is the closing credits of this movie, Schenectady. It's spelled S-Y-N-E-C-H-D-O-C-H. Is there an E at the end of that,
Griffin? There is. It's not the only weird thing about that movie, either.
And I thought, how do you pronounce that word? Because I was saying Synecdoche or Synecdoche or something like that.
And in just setting up the song, I think we had a little trouble.
I can't even pronounce it as I am so struggling. I know it rhymes with Schenectady. It would be Schenectady?
Schenectady. And yeah, the movie takes place in Schenectady, which is the kind of the joke of the title.
So then I started to laugh because I remembered that our producer, Griffin, here once played for me the YouTube pronouncer for that word. If you YouTube how to pronounce a word, any word, but say this one, you will almost certainly get a bogus pronunciation of that word. And so when you do look this word up, here is the pronouncer that you will get.
Sinekina dodi chodi. Sai? Minekina dodi chodi. Sign a Cody Doty Chode.
You can hear people laughing in the background, or maybe that's here.
No, that's, you know, that's us that's here in the side. Studio. Kristen Decker's in here, too.
I love that. Sign a Cody Doty.
Sign a Cody. In fact, I can say sign a Cody Doty Chode the wrong version better than I can the right version.
Sign a Cody Doty Chode. Ninakina Doty Chody. Sign a Cody Doty Chody.
So people are walking around going, okay, I got it. Sign a kind of Doty Chody. Because it looks so real, and it doesn't look like, well, The Onion looks real too, but there's not many clues that this is bogus.
Yeah, it's so genius because you don't know how to pronounce that word.
Right.
You will go for that one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so then do you have January, Griffin? Suppose, I don't know, you're learning English, or I don't know why January's in there. That, to me, most people would know how to pronounce. Here's how you pronounce January.
Juanuario. What? Juanuario.
Juanuario. And you look at it, J-A-N, that could be Juanuario. close enough.
I don't have quinoa up, the submission for quinoa, but I know it by heart because I've seen it a million times.
Okay.
Kokokinakwoa. Kokokinakwoa.
And how do you even spell quinoa?
Q-U-I-N-O-A. Language of origin.
Yeah, so it looks like quinoa. And how do you pronounce it, Griffin, according to this?
Kokokinakwoa.
Sinekina doti chodi. Oh, man. So be advised and be amused that if you want to know how to pronounce certain things, if you just YouTube it, you will get the most hilarious pronunciations. Faux pas, I can't say on the radio, but it's pretty funny. Okay, let's do our Vibe Score segment. Griff, you usually start us out with a song, so let's go there, shall we? Vibe Score is an app that Tom Hegberg, my cousin, and I developed. You select different categories of news that you're interested in, music, sports, Chicago. We'll feed you those stories and ask you a scorable question at the end. This is featured this week in our music category. What are we listening to here?
Sorry about that. Fifth Harmony, their hit single called Work From Home.
I like that song. I haven't heard that before.
Ty
Fifth Harmony.
Dollar sign. Yeah, it's been a hit, a big hit for a long time. And, you know, I'm trying to start up the Song of Summer battle on VibeScore.
Oh, yeah, right. You did this last year where we'll each week put up another good summer song like the JT one or... what's her face?
Meghan Trainor.
Meghan Trainor did one that Kristen didn't like last week, but I did.
There's only one song of summer, and it's Beyonce. Just Beyonce. All of Beyonce.
I'm kind of mad at JT anyway right now because he posted that he doesn't want his children to be vaccinated. And
why?
I can, of all of the celebrities, I would not put him in that cuckoo category. I'm like, dude, if that's how you feel, you get to decide. You're the parent of your children. But don't go posting that. People follow you. I don't think that's good advice. You get to do whatever you want, but I wouldn't suggest that.
So I'm going to follow the advice about my children from a pop star who is also in NSYNC and dated Britney Spears.
But he's not a dummy.
We love him.
I know. We're so disappointed. I don't want to put him on Team Britney on this one. And I even like Britney for that matter. Or I'm not Britney I'm thinking of.
Jessica Biel.
Jessica. No, not Jessica Biel. Who's
That's
the one?
That's who he's married to.
But no, I'm trying to think of who the big female. Jenny McCarthy.
Or Kristen Cavallari. There's been a list of them.
Well, it's something in the water over there. You think if somebody's normal and you find out, you know, they're a Scientologist or something like that. It happens. Anyway, coming back around to the
song. By the way, if you're a Scientologist who's not vaccinating your kids, thanks for listening. We appreciate you tuning
but
in.
But you're wrong.
But wow. How did you do that? Okay, so where were you, Griff?
Okay, so, you know, we're talking about this in the music category. Work From Home by Fifth Harmony. You liked it, right?
Yeah, right. I'm now going to vibe it. I haven't vibed this one yet. 91 final answer.
Okay.
How about you, Deck? Where are you on
70.
That?
70.
What's it getting, Griff?
91 is incredibly high. This is like your favorite song now.
You caught me at a good moment.
It's getting a 68. I put it around a 70. It's good. It's fine. Whatever.
This next one makes me crazy. You going to the celebrity category next?
Yes. This is my favorite. Okay.
This picture is dumb.
61-year-old Oscar winner J.K. Simmons appeared in photos this week looking ripped as all get out. Do you like the new muscle-bound version of Juno's dad, Peter Parker's editor in the newspaper from Spider-Man, mean drum teacher from Whiplash? These are things people...
That guy. The commercial. Guy. He's in the commercials. Yeah, the insurance commercials.
No, but you edited this for radio, and I just want you to know that the original was better because you said he was ripped as hell.
I did.
And he's, and by the way, ripped as hell doesn't always look good. Ask Madonna. Remember when she was all sinewy with her arms and stuff? He looks like Popeye on steroids.
He looks gross.
It's bad.
You don't like it?
Oh, no. I know. Right. I gave it an 18. 18 for me.
I gave it a 5.
We pulled the number down. You are high on this.
Yeah, 90. Love it. Just love
Why?
It.
Why?
Because it's so insane. I could just stare at it for all day.
Okay, well, that's a different question.
The veins are popping out of his biceps. That's
not
a good look.
But it's also not a different... It's just all about what you get out of it. I get a lot out of this picture. Looks great.
That's a different question.
He's ripped as hell.
I'm liking it the same way I'm liking David Letterman's beard. I'm like, wow, look at that.
He's kind of got a Letterman beard going on, too. Yeah.
But this is a bad look. I mean, I don't know why you want to be that way. In fact, he's looking like a guy who doesn't want to get old. Yeah. I'm pumping weights now.
But actually, if you're more ripped, you look older because your skin
It's not working,
looks
dude.
Wrinkly.
Look in the mirror.
I think it's probably for role, but yeah, for what? The Popeye's dad. Maybe.
It's a little over.
Popeye's
a little
dad.
Over the top.
In the live action Popeye's dad movie.
When are they going to make a movie about Popeye's dad? You know, I've
honestly
been waiting for this.
It's not that crazy an idea. Okay, moving on.
All right.
In the movies category, speaking of movies, Finding Dory, the sequel to Pixar's instant classic 2003 film Finding Nemo, hits theaters today. So we're asking on the app what you think of it, but since none of us have seen it yet, we haven't had much chance. Just what's your score for Pixar movies overall?
Oh.
The studio Pixar. You got Toy Story, Up, WALL-E, you know, a million others.
I would say 80. There are a lot I haven't seen, but the ones I have I really like Toy Story.
Yeah, they've got a lot of you're shaking your head. What's the deal?
I want to give it a high score, but I don't go to the movies, so I don't go to those movies. I'm not attracted to them, so... And every time, though, I find myself clicking on one or have watched Toy Story, I thought they were amazing. Mm-hmm. I watched the trailer for the Nemo sequel, Dory, and It's great.
Yeah, it's really cute.
It's awesome. So I was going to give the trailer a 90. I'll say 90.
Okay.
Where are you?
I'd give Pixar overall a 90. They've fallen off a little bit. They've made some sequels that didn't do as, like, Monsters University is not as great as the original Monsters, Inc.
Oh, but I loved Monsters.
They have made some of my favorite movies of all time. Ratatouille and Up, I love so much. And, Toy Story, of course.
You know,
a million.
Don't hate me for this, but Up, I did not like. Ugh. I thought Up was so overrated. Don't see it. It's a loser. It's a bad movie.
I actually thought WALL-E was a little overrated. That's the one that I didn't go crazy
What's the
for,
one but... about your feelings? Is that Pixar?
Inside Out. Yeah, we just, yeah.
And
that's, I haven't seen that one either.
That's really good.
Kristen, it's, you guys, I think you would love these movies.
It's
I'm surprised
really
you haven't seen them.
And as a female, I think you would really like Inside Out.
Are you trying to stereotype?
It connects with women well. Girls, for sure. Okay,
I saw Toy Story 3 because Matt Bubala said he cried in it.
Yeah, Matt cries in a lot.
Every time a Pixar movie comes out, everybody's bragging about how much they cried at it. Oh, you think you're emotional? I cried. This is how much I cried.
I cried at the opening credits.
That's what happens a lot of the time. Okay. In sports, I think we'll go to next. How about sports? As of this week, Ichiro Suzuki has passed Pete Rose on the all-time hit list to take the top spot, if you count the 1,278 hits he got in Japan's Nippon Professional Baseball League. Pete Rose and many others claim that this is like counting minor league hits. Others say you should count them, and Ichiro is number one. What do you think? Who's the true hit king?
I got a baseball buddy who gets angry when you ask the question. I mean, he's dismissive. It's MLB and that's all. Pete Rose has the MLB record, but if you want to say professional baseball, I'm ready to give it to Ichiro. I like his game, and I've liked his career. I'm with Ichiro on this one. He is the all-time professional baseball hit leader.
Wow, okay. I see, I love Ichiro, and I think I've got more love for him than I do Pete Rose.
Yeah.
But I don't think I can disagree with him. It does seem like you should probably only count MLB. So I went like 70. We've got Pete Rose at 100, Ichiro at 0.
Okay, I'm more like 20 on this one. I'm over on Ichiro's side.
And I know Kristen's very passionate. She wants to weigh in.
America, Pete Rose.
Is that how you vote on things?
I guess, yeah, because I have no idea.
Do you know who Sadahara O is? He was the Babe Ruth or the Hank Aaron of Japan.
No.
And we don't get in this conversation. I think he had more home runs. We'll ask the boys from the beat.
Yeah, they'll know.
All right, go to the next one.
All right, in TV, Sal Valentinetti.
Ah, my guy!
That we played the clip of earlier on America's Got Talent.
Yes!
He sang a pretty spot-on rendition of Frank Sinatra's My Way, and it earned him a standing ovation. Watch the clip. Does it have you clapping or booing? What do you think?
82.
90.
Loved it.
And my 90 is because of the whole television production of that moment. He can do a good version of a Frank Sinatra song. I don't think he has a career in music. That's just my guess. But that's just such a great little piece of TV there. I gave it a 90.
I feel the same way, but I let it affect my score, so I'm more like a 71.
Yeah.
Because also the fact that he's singing My Way, and he says, I did it my way.
No, I did it Sal's way.
I know, and he plugs in his name. It's like, no, you're doing it Frank's way. That's the...
Now that you mention
100%
it.
100% not your way.
If that was...
He sounded great. He really did.
On American Idol, he doesn't go to the finals, that's for sure. But what a fun moment.
Didn't make it his own.
It's better than delivering pizzas.
Yeah, that's the cool thing. That's his day job.
No, I got nothing but love for Sal. Okay, and then in the laugh category, we posted this clip from The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and it was a stand-up set from Maria Bamford, who is beloved by many comedy fans, and she's a stand-up comedian for many years. She hasn't experienced much mainstream success, but she has a new Netflix show called Lady Dynamite, and critics love that, and it seems to be doing well with fans, too. So we put up this clip from The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, where she's doing stand-up. It's from a couple months ago.
Is that the clip you and I were watching in the green room?
Yeah. I could tell you were not impressed.
I don't laugh.
She is
good. She's,
you don't laugh out loud much.
She's talented.
Yeah, she's great.
She is very...
I love her.
I mean, her stuff's kind of weird and quirky, and she makes sounds.
Like, she's very good at voices.
Oh, God, yeah. And when she's one of those people, when she's talking, it's just funny to watch her talk.
Right.
You know, to tell a story. You know what I mean, Griff?
Yeah, oh, totally. I don't think you know this, but she's from Duluth, Minnesota.
I didn't until you guys pointed that out to me before the show, or Decker did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're big on her.
I love that clip. Love and the new show on Netflix I've been watching, and it's absolutely hilarious.
What's the show?
Lady Dynamite.
Lady Dynamite on Netflix. It just went up. And yeah, the clip's so getting an 80.
Definitely binge watch it if you're into comedy.
Yeah, okay. 80 is a good number, I think, for...
79 for me.
Lady Dynamite. Where, and you were up there too, right, Griff?
Yeah.
That's our Vibe Score segment for today. Vibe Score is one word, V-I-B-E-S-C-O-R-E.
Wait, we didn't get to who's going to win the NBA Finals. Sports!
Okay, I thought I'd skip it because I said last week we would stop talking about the Warriors, but
you can't,
there's one game
like
left.
It's like one, yeah, you got to...
One more.
What do you guys think?
So it's 100 the Warriors and 0 the Cavaliers?
Yeah, sure.
And you could say, well, I don't know exactly for sure, but I would guess I'm going to go with, I think the Warriors are going to win, but it's home. I'm going to go, but damn, LeBron showed up. And these little baby Warriors. Is that what we called them backstage? Babies?
I don't know.
I think we used other terms with them.
I'm going to go Warriors, but only 55, just past the halfway mark.
Okay. Yeah,
How about you?
I mean, every time we've doubted them,
they've proven us wrong.
I mean, sort of. I mean, they were not supposed to lose this many games to the Cavs, but I'm still going to go Warriors. I'll go like 75.
How about
I think
you,
they're going to win.
I'm going to go Cavs.
America? Oh,
I'm
Cavs.
I'm going to go America. I'm going to go LeBron.
Yeah,
I'm rooting for LeBron for sure.
I find myself doing that too.
Because I still don't know where Golden State is.
That is our... There's a couple of guys that are about to come into the studio, and they'll explain that to us. They're the boys from The Beat. It's 252. That's our Vibe Score segment. You can download it on the App Store, Vibe Score, one word, V-I-B-E-S-C-O-R-E. It's 252 on WGN. Boys from The Beat are here getting ready for their show. Hi, fellas. Thanks for helping me out on that ad.
Oh, no problem. I do have to bring up something, though, that basically crushed my heart about 15 minutes ago when you mentioned that Justin Timberlake does not want to vaccinate his kids. I am a very big Justin Timberlake fan.
I am, too. Who isn't?
And that... That was very disappointing to hear. I did not see that post or whatever you put that out there with this week.
I'm sorry I shared that with you. I mean, that's kind of brought you down.
Hurt me.
Everybody has the right to make their own decisions in life, Timberlake included.
I know. I think the real criticism he's getting is because he's got now he's going to get more people to do what he does because that's what happens to celebrities.
Right.
I'm the opposite of that, by the way. If I say, hey, everybody do this. Everybody does the other thing. I have kind of the opposite effect on people.
I'll follow you, King John.
Thank you, sir. So what are you guys talking about?
Well, we got some basketball, which is, I guess.
You ever throw your mouth guard, John Williams, after the show?
I don't think Michael Jordan ever threw his mouth guard. I'm interested in the conversation about greatest players, greatest teams. This is the greatest. If they lose this, it would be the greatest implosion of all time.
If they lose tomorrow, they'll have lost as many games in the playoffs as they lost in the regular season, which is an incredible stat, right?
It really is.
And the other side of it is you just said Michael Jordan's never thrown his mouth guard.
Did
How about the guy that he's being compared to as, you know, Steph Curry, the best player in basketball? Well, the guy that's been in the spotlight since he was about 14, who people love to hate on, LeBron James never thrown his mouth guard either. He never had a meltdown like that.
No, and if he did, he would be getting just lit up everywhere.
Oh, they'd kill him.
Think this is Bron's game to win? Like LeBron, yes. He's sitting there going, you know what? I can do this. I can win this game.
It's a big game for LeBron.
It is.
I mean, really, we're talking. If you're talking about LeBron's legacy, tomorrow night is a huge game. By the way, I've never done a radio show with a mouth guard, and I don't plan on doing one.
How about the fact that, and we'll get into this on the show a little bit. I know you got to go, John.
I got to get out of your way.
Well, if the Cavaliers fan had not been cool with Steph and giving him the mouth guard back, if he had actually just toppled over and acted like, you know, just go full fake injury, Steph Curry might have been suspended. And the Cleveland Cavaliers could be staring at ending the drought of Cleveland.
That was the first text I got. Do you think he should be suspended for Game 7? I go, you've got to be kidding me. That is the dumbest thing.
I agree. But
no chance he would have been suspended.
If the Cavs fan goes down and acts like he just got his eye poked out, and all of a sudden he shows up with a patch and had a press conference, he might be suspended.
If it was a pocket knife, you know, something else.
Yeah. I don't care if the mouth guard somehow gave him a concussion and knocked him out and they had to take him off on a stretcher. You're not suspending the MVP for Game 7 of the Finals.
Krista Flores, thank you for engineering my show today. Griffin Filipich is our producer. Thank you all, and you guys are off to another good start.